Welcome to Empathy Power Up, a collaboration of two people who connected during the pandemic through their love of empathy and action. Two people from very different backgrounds helping each other find ways to love themselves, understand their experiences better, and help reverse the rise of narcissism and the divides in our communities.
We will cover various topics about the human experience to help us power up on tools of empathy and emotional intelligence in the pursuit of one simple goal: create a world where people seek to understand themselves and each other. This is a learning journey amongst fellow humans. We're all just figuring out life together.
So we've reached the end of season two. And what a season it's been!
Yay, we did it! Yeah.
And here we are. At the end of this, for this episode, we're going to try to give you a highlight reel of this past season. And we're going to talk a little bit later about what we learned, what surprised us, what might be next for the podcast, for us. So let's just get right into it. First off, let's talk about our first episode. This is where we talked about the makings of a modern organization. And this was like when I was exploring this question I've asked myself multiple times: what really makes a modern organization? And I think you probably thought about this before. It might have been on your mind, especially now that we're in the 21st century. How about you?
No, I think that was such a great prompt in the beginning, because what we did in season one was all just unpack what's essentially unhealthy workplaces and unhealthy cultures. And we unpacked all these different things through the different characteristics of our culture and all these systems. So this question to start off season two of Empathy Power Up was really powerful, because it's like, okay, then what does a modern workplace look like? And what does that? It was setting like a vision and setting that path to that. And I thought that was very interesting. And it's a powerful question, because then what modern is changing every day, so to speak, and right. as well.
Yeah. And I was actually thinking that, like, as we're emerging from this pandemic, it kind of feels like we're in the middle of a new kind of roaring 20s. Like we were like a century ago, we were careening towards a lot of change and growth. And I was thinking, you know what? I hope this doesn't end the same way the 20s did.
I hope it ends with me in a flapper dress. That's
I'd like to see that sometime. It's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to see that too. I think that would be a fun party. I had a roaring 20s party once, but I didn't dress in a dress. I was in a suit.
Okay. Oh, see, I think we should switch the gender norms. You do suit. I do suit. You do flapper dress. I've got a perfect one for you. And a fake cigarette.
Yeah. You know, let the people listening think, imagine yourself, I am in a flapper dress right now in this roaring 20s.
And I have my hair slicked back and I'm wearing a suit.
Yeah.
So that question has been perpetually in my mind of, like, you know, as we've been thinking about the roaring 20s, about this new era that we're in. Mm-hmm. And it's been on the mind of a lot of other people, like the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy. He's been asking a lot of the same questions about the loneliness epidemic. And this whole season kind of unfolded while we decoded this framework and we saw how we can put it into practice in our lives and in the workplace.
Yeah, it's quite impressive to sort of contextualize and frame this. And what we did in episode two was basically say, okay, let's just understand what the framework is first, and then we're going to nerd out and unpack it in all the remaining episodes, right? So in our second episode, we just introduced the framework. We talked about what U.S. Surgeon General's office and Dr. Vivek Murthy's intention was to really understand that coming out of and learning from the global pandemic and emerging is like, hey, mental health is a big problem that we're realizing, and especially in workplaces, because that's where we spend majority of our time, in workplaces. And so I think it was a powerful way to approach it. And then we introduced the five components of the framework: protection from harm, connection and community, work-life harmony, mattering at work, opportunity for growth. And all of these have these fundamental needs, these human needs that were linked to each for each of these components that help us further understand what each of these are and why they're important in workplaces. And we sort of started unpacking that further in the episode, where we really started to understand this first concept of centering worker voice and equity, which is what this framework is completely based on. And Amy, I'm curious, like, I think I learned from you this how to sort of think about this worker voice, centering of worker voice and equity in this framework, and why this framework is so interesting to both of us. And we sort of dove deep into researching this and unpacking this in all the episodes we did. But like, what are your thoughts that are coming into worker voice and equity?
Yeah, I think underlying all of this is the idea of power, right? And it's this idea of like, how do you cede power? Cede power as in give power to different groups of people. If I'm in a leadership position, how do I also, in my work around burnout as well, is like, how do I build the power within myself to act and learn these things and be an actor in my life instead of letting things happen to me? There are some interesting things like of like power dynamics of like power over, which is like what we typically think about when it comes to power. And then it goes all the way to like giving power to groups of people. So it's like the spectrum that is like, how do you, and the really sweet spot I think for us right now is like, how do we get to power with? So it's like, if empathy is feeling with somebody instead of for someone, how can we get to a place where we're designing a world and a organization and a company that is with each other instead of just for them.
Oh, I love the way you frame that, and I think bringing that, it sort of highlights what the framework itself talked about, which was how do we not just focus on leadership directives, but bringing the workers into the organizational processes and policies. And I think that was an important part of the centering of worker voice and equity in this framework as well. The idea of inclusion and participation of everyone, and that comes back to what you said, power with, instead of just, oh, I'm going to hold power, but try to make your life better. And that never is, like, we've learned again and again and again, that doesn't do it. That doesn't get there. Because when we share power, when we have power with, it's a collaborative process where people come in and they have a more of a buy-in then in the success.
Yeah, and they trust you. There's a lot of like positive elements of that when we're working with each other instead of against each other. It's not a competition. We're all trying to get the work done at the end of the day. So that's really a big part of this whole bigger picture. And then the thing that's really connected to power is agency. Like, do we have the ability to change the world around us and control the world that we want to create? And that's the power and agency are so connected there.
What you said, the world we want to create, it's one of the rules, like I feel like it is the rule of life. It's like, create the world you want, create the reality you want, and it comes with sharing power. It comes with understanding that we want to create spaces where workplace health and mental health and well-being is centered, and way to do that is in a way of inclusion, participation, recognition, engagement, all these things. And one of the things I notice is a lot of the people try to, and especially companies, focus on maybe, oh, the leadership only has to do this, and it has to come from the leadership, or maybe it has to come from the middle group, or it has to come from the front lines. And instead, it's not really, it's all of the above.
Right, it's a all hands on deck kind of situation what I'm seeing here. And I think
And the power has to be shared by the leadership in that situation.
yes, it has to be like shared because usually in historically like power has been all the way at the top, and so it's our leadership that needs to start saying, you know what, I'm going to start sharing and being with each other, telling stories, creating a sense where I'm going to start stepping into well-being, the workplace. Yeah, and that leads me to protection from harm, which is the first petal of this framework, this part of this framework. And this is the well-being of workers and the health of organizations are inextricably connected. So more than 2 in 5 workers from the American Psychological Association in 2022 reported that health and safety concerns negatively affected their stress level at work. We are working, our week, work weeks have gotten longer, our boundaries between professional and personal lives have dissolved. We're working around the clock, working an average of 9.2 hours of unpaid overtime per week. And this is in the US. And just a year ago, it was 7.3 hours. So we're working 2 hours extra just in a year, in our overtime. So, and like there's a lot of other research that's saying that overwork is killing nearly 1 million people every year. So what does that mean? Protection from harm. It's physical security, it's psychological safety, rest, mental health support, diversity, equity, inclusion, and access. Having some norms there and staying away from like this hustle culture that has been glorified to sacrifice sleep and work-life balance in favor of production and superficial success. We talked about Tricia Hersey's work at the Knapp Ministry and her book about rest as resistance. And we don't want to be deeply connected, exhausted, or sleep deprived, which she talks about in her work, and this grind culture stealing our imagination.
And I think this is so important, and I remember in my work, and I used to do this too in a previous company I worked at where I, it would be a badge of honor. I didn't sleep a lot. I'd worked so hard and I didn't sleep, or I've been traveling and I didn't sleep. And oh my goodness. And the folks would talk about that as a badge of honor. And now where I'm like, if I prioritize sleep, because that's study and the studies have shown and the data that shows that it is worse to be sleep deprived than be drunk.
Right. I've seen that too.
So
Anybody
drunk
who's trying to
driving, drunk
drive
driving,
home late,
yeah, is
there's that.
relatively safer than driving with less sleep. And
Yeah.
it's just incredible to think about. And it is such a fundamental need to rest and rejuvenate. And it brings better work. I think people, it's not that we're saying produce less, or I mean, I kind of sometimes do, but like what I'm really saying is when we rest, when we take a pause, when we think about the harm and protection around like these concepts and these fundamental needs, we can do better work. It can be thoughtful work. It can be work that in itself protects from harm because we're thinking through
Yeah.
different things versus trying to that, what you said, hustle culture, try to rush or try to, go fast and break things.
Exactly. And there's actually an article, an opinion piece that was just posted in the New York Times last week, and it was called about to overcome burnout, like you should like embrace seasonality. So giving rest, having the season for different things, which is like us as humans have been, when the Industrial Revolution happened, not to, I'm not going to give you a whole lesson here on like the future, but when the past, but like when the Industrial Revolution happened, it changed the natural ways of being we've been doing for 300,000 years as humans, right? And so in a way, this idea of protection from harm is very like going back to those 300,000 years of human existence. It's like, am I safe, right? Am I psychologically safe, but am I physically safe, right? Physically safe in the workplace. You got OSHA, got a lot of stuff going in there, but psychological safety so that you don't actually get into fight or flight or get triggered, right? Which is taking in that like very animalistic piece of our brain. So we won't get punished for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, or mistakes. So, there's lots of things that our workplaces can do by, supporting and normalizing mental health, creating a supporting the different mental health professionals, creating accessible services for different people and engaging, collaborating, doing some problem solving in the workplace is also really something that organizations can do to have intentional connections and mentor and, tell some stories in the workplace too.
And I think it's so important. Like, if we fundamentally think about safety and security, it really is also protection for the organization itself. It's when
Right.
we protect the people, we're protecting the organization. It's a win-win situation for everyone involved. And I
Right.
think as we talk about safety and security, the next sort of fundamental that component that comes into this pedal, which we explored in episode four, was connection and community. And I really lean into this because my main job, my full-time job at T-Mobile I work is trying to be best at connecting people to their world. And it's this idea of how do we build community and this network through at least the work that I'm doing, but it's such an important part of a workplace. And because, yeah, you can come do your work, but when we have those connections, when we have community, we learn from each other. When we build each other, we talk, we communicate more often, we have less mistakes, we are more generous with each other for intent and of that positive intent approach instead of going down negative spirals. And I see that happen again and again where people, when companies, and I see that in my company, is when community is the focus, when we're having open conversations, open to building those connections, like something as simple as, hey, can we have a in the lunch area a table that says, that just says, if you sit here, you're wanting to share lunch with, like, have a moment with someone else. And that builds that connection. And I think that was such an important part of this framework to be included. Things that bring that in are like the ERG groups, employee resource groups, or affinity groups. These are groups where people can come in around shared values or shared interests and share some time together, even if it's just a cultural event, or if it's a game, or trivia, or just having some food or drinks, or just really leaning into so that we can start feeling the sense of belonging, which is such a fundamental need. And that's what this component talks about, belonging and social support, where we can give each other social support, where we can tell each other, like, where we can learn what books we each of us are reading. And that kind of stuff helps us feel like there is a space for me here, and I can take up space without having to feel guilty or anxious about it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is secretly my favorite, one of the five pieces of the framework, connection and community. It's something that drives me all the time. And I think that's what's really important here is when we talk about connection and community is like being in service of other people and being in service of other humans and being self-aware, having humility, right? So that we don't think that we're better than another person, but obviously, empathy, this is the empathy power up. Emotional intelligence is so important. Interpersonal development, how do we create better relationships happens because we know ourselves and we're in relation to each other. So, this culture of belonging really starts with us, but it's also at the same time, how do we create moments that people can really connect and feel like that they can come to anybody within that culture with a problem or anything that they need.
And if we don't have these kind of sense of community and social support, and we just like, no, you're here to work and leave, that loyalty for that organization, for that mission, that the impact that they're working on is not as present. It's more like, I'm here to clock in, clock out. And maybe we don't leave an impression then, because we don't feel like, oh yeah, this is a place I go in, I come back. But if I feel like, oh, I belong here, this is, I have this sense of ownership over this mission, over this organization, that can help really transform how people think, how people approach. They bring in ideas. They feel like their idea can be heard, can be impactful, can build something towards the mission that they're on.
Exactly. And if they don't have that, it's going to have a high turnover at the company organization. So,
Totally.
another thing that contributes to turnover in the workplace is a lack of work-life harmony. So many of us can admit we work too much. I would say I even said I'm a workaholic, or I'm a recovering workaholic, I would say.
Yay, there you go. Snap, snap, snap.
Yeah, so like I'm trying to stay away from that, not trying to achieve the next big thing. But we've been conditioned to chase production over knowing our own self-worth and resting. You know, we talked about that a little bit, the rest piece with Tertia Hershey.
And I think that what you mentioned is like the workaholic aspect is because there's this idea that ambition is amazing. Who is ambitious? And it's not that I'm knocking anything, because I don't think I think there's no right or wrong. I think we just have find a balance for things, that what makes sense in different contexts, things make sense. And ambition for like a mission for our community. I am ambitious, say, to like I want to end militarism, for example. And we'll talk about that later. But like ambition there makes sense. But like I used to have that ambition, an ambition of like I have an ambition to make so much money. And that is an ambition for profit, an ambition for gain. And profit fundamentally means if I make a profit, someone is losing profit. Like at that point, it's a win-lose situation. And then I became a workaholic in that sense. It's like I was just working, working, working to say, how do I get the most money coming out of it? Now, sitting here, I understand I'm sitting in a place of privilege, so, and I can say this. So when people aren't in that place of privilege, when survival is all that is between them and that next meal or the next resource they need, I understand that that ambition makes sense. But I think we have to find that balance.
Yeah, that's what it is. And like instead of work-life balance, they say work-life harmony, because it's not just a balancing beam. Sometimes one's going to be like stronger than another in moments that you need it. But I think the lack of this work-life harmony is taking a big toll on our physical and mental health. We're becoming less willing to sacrifice these different things in today's world. And there's this great reset that's happening in this place. We're starting to understand that it's beneficial and generative for us to participate in this kind of world, that where we might more index more on people that we are friends and family, you know, our communities. And what organizations can do is to help to increase worker autonomy, and that's essentially not controlling how people do their work and having more flexibility, the ability to work when and where it's best for them. And we've heard a lot of return to office conversations about forcing people to come to the office. So, you know, organizations who are able to have that flexibility, keep people in their jobs for longer, and have an increased quality of work. And you know, there's lots of things about increasing boundaries, you know, as an individual, and stepping into that power I was telling you about, power within, to create the life you want to live.
I think if when people feel free, what does that mean? That means I have the autonomy. I have the flexibility to make choices my way. And so I understand going to the workplace, there are certain expectations that we have agreed to deliver something. But in those, it's really about delivering an outcome. And if you have a set of rules that are assigned, aligned to this, then having autonomy and flexibility brings the best out of people. Think about the time, when you felt someone was trying to control your choices, how frustrating that may be, is like, even if it's against your values or against what makes sense to you, then it's even more frustrating. It's even more painful. And at that point, then maybe you can disagree. Maybe you can say like, fine, I'll do it your way. I'll do it. But then is our heart in it?
You lost your agency, right? Going back to what I was saying before, you know?
Absolutely. And I think with that, like it leads into this idea of mattering at work, which we talked about in episode 6. And it comes in that when we lose our agency, like there's impact to our dignity, and it's impact to us, where it's like we want to feel mattered. We want to feel that there's meaning in the work we're doing. It's making an impact in our culture in our communities, in our country, in our world, in our planet, in our universe. It means something to me because I am helping the system in some way to get better, to feel, to do better for myself, for others. And this idea is when I have autonomy, when I have flexibility, when I feel a sense of belonging, when I feel safe, I can hold myself with dignity. And dignity is such an important thing. And this one, we really, I feel like on that episode, I remember we were unpacking quite a bit. We went deep into the dignity space, and really we started talking about the psychology of mattering and how this impacts us, that when we don't feel meaning, when we don't feel mattering, it's associated with burnout, self-criticism, anxiety, depression, aggression, increased risk of suicide, all these things. So talking about this frame of workplace health, workplace health and well-being, this idea, this fundamental need to feel like I have a sense of dignity, that what I'm doing has this meaning, that it's something that is helping. It's not I am even though I am part of the machine of this organization, what I do has an impact. And we talked about dignity is the sense of being respected and valued as humans. And Dr. Donna Hicks explains two core truths of dignity, which one were that we are inherently valuable and worthy, and our dignity is vulnerable and can be wounded. And I think that's so important, is when dignity feels wounded, when is when but when it is affirmed that you belong, that yes, this is a place where you have a meaning, where you are a valued human, it enhances well-being. And when we feel disrespected, that may lead to stress and feelings of anger, cynicism, hostility, withdrawal, maybe self-worth, all of this becomes a problem. And all of this, both meaning and dignity, are linked to power and agency. Just like it all comes down to, because of that centering of the worker voice that this framework is based on. And we really want to we unpack this complex topic in that. And I thought it was important to dive deep into this. And that's why we nerd out into some of these topics in each of these episodes.
Yeah, these rabbit holes, I call them.
Yeah.
And what, if we feel like we're connected, we have work-life harmony, we feel protected from harm, both physically and mentally. We also are able to feel like we matter at work. All of these things kind of lead to this last piece, which is an opportunity for growth. So when we feel comfortable, when we feel like we belong at work, it doesn't necessarily, this one I remember us having this with mattering at work, it took us a little while for us to get around to it, but for an opportunities for growth, we all yearn to learn and to grow. It's like really central to who we are. And like there's many things that are blocking us from becoming a better person. And we're trying to be good at our jobs. We have our relationships. We have, trying to take care of ourselves in the meantime. But there's never seems to be enough time in the day, as we were talking about work-life harmony. But what is happening also is that there's a lot of fear that happens in this world that we're in because there's so many things happening. We're living in like this perma crisis. It seems like everything's a perma crisis is essentially like everything seems like it's a crisis in the world today. And so,
I just wanted, I interrupted you, but I feel like getting off of Twitter, getting off of some of these platforms has helped me not feel that as
yes.
much.
Right, right,
Because
right.
then things get baked a little and has some little time to soak instead of immediate reaction and uproar and stuff. So I just want, I, when it's like, I agree, like there's this idea, this perma crisis, and that it starts pulling attention. So getting off of some of these platforms has been very, very good for my health
And I
game.
also try not to listen to the news or pay attention to the news, even though I feel like I'm connected to it all the time.
Well, and the 24/7 news cycle, like that always news, it doesn't, it's similar to the Twitter. It's like whatever's the crisis versus let's bake it in, let's process it, let's unpack it and get the nuance. And
Right.
when then it's important, and then by then we'll have a better understanding of it as well. Sorry, I took us on a little tangent because of
We went on our own rabbit hole with that one. But when we get overwhelmed with this, with our lives, like we were just talking about, we actually we fall back on our comfort zone, which what surrounds our comfort zone is this fear of all of this stuff happening to us, climate change, the 2024 election, like all the things that are happening or in the world around us. And so, but beyond those fears is this real nuggets of learning and growth that we need to feel fulfilled. And this last group section in the framework talks about the essentials of human learning and a sense of accomplishment. So, how do we acquire new skills and knowledge in the workplace? An accomplishment is the outcome of meeting goals and having an impact at the end of a day. And what I think on this one, I geeked out. I don't think I geek out on every episode. Like I went down this rabbit hole of like horizontal development versus vertical development, and how horizontal is learning new skills. Vertical is how we kind of like upgrade ourselves, our operating system, where we are now like going to higher levels, moving from a place of dependence, where we're dependent upon everybody else, to independence, where I'm saying I'm better than everybody else, or I want to stand out from everybody else, to this new level of interdependence. And when we talk about empathy and compassion lives in interdependence. It's when we realize that we're not alone in this world and we need to rely on each other.
And I think this interdependence is what life is fundamentally about. I believe we are all different expressions of the same life. We all came from the same
Yeah, that was
starting
nice to
point.
me the other day.
And we are interdependent because we came from the same place. Yes, we are independent, but we are interdependent. And that understanding that, and like you said, it's this empathy comes from interdependence. And tapping into that interdependence is how we practice empathy.
Yeah, it's true. And it's like it's once we get to that place and we have that aha moment. But the thing is, the research shows that many of us don't get to that place. So I think, we have a lot of work cut out for ourselves at the end of the day. But the more and more we have these conversations, the better off I think we can be. And as we go through life, and this is the part of like this, what's really interesting about this framework, there's been a lot of themes along the way, but it's actually like this idea of a polarity, where it's like two ends of a polar opposites that you need to kind of manage in between.
Got it.
And we've got on one side of the spectrum, you've got comfort. The other side is growth, and we're constantly going between that of like, do I need to be in my comfort zone and feel comfort? And when do I need to be in my growth zone and grow and be better? So that's a lot of stuff we got to deal with in the workplace. So that's the end of the framework that we're talking about. We are.
It's a great framework. I'm so glad the U.S. Surgeon General's office put this together. I think, and I know a lot of people don't know about the framework. People are surprised when you've told them about it. And I think we can really understand this, and it's a simple way to understand the idea of what is that modern workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am so glad we went on this journey together because I think it made me a stronger human, a stronger practitioner, because I started unpacking things that I've been thinking about for a really long time. I really got to get up close and personal with this framework, that it seems like it's easy to understand, and that's what the beauty of this is, but it's really complex in how you apply it in the workplace. And it seems that, like I was saying, we work in this perma crisis, and we need to evolve to meet the moment. And not just as individuals, but our leaders, the organizations in which we're in, we need to meet the moment. And I feel like the pool of capitalism has been taking hold in our workplace. We're more prone to be stressed out. We're working longer hours. We have these mental health conditions that are popping up. And we don't have like the mental health support to support this work, right?
No, there's not enough mental health systems, workers, access is not there, it's expensive, oh my gosh.
It's inaccessible. Talk about equity right there. And we're not well, right? And so I'm grateful that this framework exists. There's a way out. We can build cultures of physical and psychological safety. We can find connection and community at work and elsewhere, create a more harmonious life. We can start by mattering at work, looking at the impact that we make, and then like learning and growing to be better humans. That's the whole framework right there. And it's all within our arm's reach, you know, if we have a culture that supports it and we also embrace it ourselves. So.
I feel like out of this framework, it also it enabled me to really, because as a leader, as a manager, to apply all of this in my day-to-day at work as well, where thinking about the needs, like, oh, people want autonomy, people want to make choices, and how do I ba find a that balance of providing direction to my team while letting them make mistakes, while letting them feel like they are part of the process, and being more collaborative and going through different, even the change management. We can apply this framework when we're trying to drive change, because when we apply this framework in those moments of change where plasticity is not rigid, it's malleable, we apply these framework, it can start having this ripple effect. And so that was something that I starting to notice, because if I do that, then they're doing it in their workplace and they're role modeling those behaviors that others can see it, and so it can have a ripple effect. So in fact, what this allowed me to do is that we don't have to wait for the organization to start applying some of these values, applying some of these needs, and thinking about how we do that. Each of us can start sort of role modeling that, and start of bringing that into our place. And we talked about that in each of the episodes, what we can do individually and what we can do as a leader, and we can be a leader and an individual at the same time. And I think that was my takeaway in that journey as well. And Amy, what surprised you? If it was anything that came out that was surprising.
Well, looking back at the notes for this and the show notes, I was like, dang, we did a lot of research. which is good. You know, like this, I went down way too many rabbit holes, but at the same time, like I actually grew a love for rabbit holes, like these rabbit holes. And you know, I'd love learning about history and like why did we get to this place? So that's something that I was surprised about. And then also like there's a lot of like my book's been published for 3 years now, and like a lot of the work that's what was there is actually really relevant in this framework as well. So I was just like, oh, okay, well, it's just a new way of applying some of the things in that I've been doing.
And I think for me, what I was surprised about was the fact that this existed, to be honest. When you first brought it, Amy, you found it, you brought it to into the conversation, and I was like, wait, the government did this? The US Surgeon General? That's pretty impressive. Like, that felt like, because I had such low expectations of our system, where because of the hold of, oh, no DEI and no this, no that, oh, just, pull up your bootstraps mentality, that's the harmful culture. So I was really surprised that this exists. What I'm surprised also was how not many people know about this. It is not abundant. And part of it is that if we look at the US Surgeon General to guide us into being healthy, into thinking through, I think having that office and promoting this even more would be something I hope that the government does in the future.
Yeah, and I hope it, you know, as we're getting ready to go into the next in the next administration, and then as after this organization or stay in the same administration, we'll see what happens. But like as we go into this, like I hope that this is something that they continue doing, and the the office of the US Surgeon General. And I think that you're exactly right. A lot of people don't know about it. I also, what was interesting is that I went to a conference in the fall, and somebody that I know, like anecdotally, was like, "Hey, I'm doing a workshop on the framework for mental health and well-being." She was talking about it in her context as she's talking about it. And I was just sitting there, and it was funny because I was like been studying it so much that she was like, "It came out in like October 2023." And I was like, "No, it didn't. It came out in 2022." I was like a bit of a meanie,
I'm
but
an expert here,
I was like,
girl, put
listen,
the phone
girl.
down.
But it was just really interesting because this wealth of knowledge. But what's interesting about the framework is that it's made for practitioners. It's not going to give you the whole story. And this is kind of like leading me to like what's next for the podcast. And well, not for the podcast, but for me, is like I'm actually going to be doing this, like actually doing workshops on decoding this framework with clients this year, and I'm really excited to do that. And so, like, how do I take the work that we've done in this year and actually apply it?
Yeah,
So,
and folks,
yeah.
if you want to bring this framework and decode in your workplace and bring this, contact Amy. Reach out to her
Yes,
on LinkedIn.
I'm here.
I think Amy will do a fantastic job. She will rock it because you saw how you've heard, if you've reached this far, how much research has gone in.
Yeah, I have so much research, so much work. I'm really passionate about this, and I want people to really digest it and to incorporate it into their lives. And so excited about that. And what else is happening in my life? Since we started this season, I've done my brand refresh. So I'm like, hey, here's a new and improved Amy in the world. And I've also launched an organization because the more and more I went deeper into this work and other conversations I was having, I realized that a lot of people need to overcome burnout. And that's really related to this work. And I think it's the biggest thing that's blocking empathy in the world. And so the organization is called Healing for Work. And I have a full framework and different healing loops and things like that. So we have free support sessions every Tuesday that people can jump in on to kind of learn and heal from burnout, and a weekly newsletter that goes out. So those are some of the things we've been working on.
A lot of great things to check out there. I've been really focused on my main day job for the recently with some big movements there. But beyond that, what I've been thinking and working on is my husband and I, we just are getting we're towards the second half of the of a children's picture book that we want to put out, and we finished it. We just need to get to this, get it in the now the machine of getting it out. And we're also looking at how we can get the world to play, because I really, really, one of the things that frustrates us is this focus on fighting and violence and militarism. It's everywhere. And so we think that the way to solve that is through play, and it's not us against them play, it's us together just playing, and with no winners and losers, just taking time to play. And so we're thinking about how we can do that, and we're starting small and ripple micro and start building on that. So those are some things we're putting out. In addition to that, we're continuing to through Jago, my organization, where we're helping companies learn empathy and grow empathy and help drive into that. So those are some of the things that we're continuing to do. But finally, the question is, what's next for for the podcast? This is our season finale. We finished two seasons. That's incredible. Two seasons of this. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm stuck with it for long enough.
So what's next for us, Amy?
Sure, I'm happy to talk about that. Well, we're about to go deeper, submerge ourselves in this topic even further. So, this whole season it was like it's been like the Kevin and Amy show, trying to like go deeper and to understand like, how do we interpret this framework? How might a practitioner look at it? But we want to go to you. We want to talk to people in our networks and in the world about what they think about this framework using the different topics we're going to be bringing in, different interviewers. We're going to come in and just talk about what do they think about the workplace. What have they done to make the world a more human and empathetic place? So we're going to be gathering stories and sharing learnings. So if you have something, a story that you'd love to share, or you've heard a great story, please shout us out and let us know. So that's the latest that we're going to be having for this next season. So we'll be working on it in the next few months. And so thank you for being with us in this season. If you like what you've heard here, subscribe and follow us on LinkedIn. Individually, Kevin Shaw at, is it Shaw Kevin, right?
Yeah, just search Kevin Shaw on LinkedIn and
Okay.
you'll see my fabulous face with the blue hair, and just that's
Yes.
me.
Okay. There
Yeah,
you
because
are.
I got off Twitter, so that not
Yeah.
in there. And so
Now
yeah.
called X. And I am at Amy J. Wilson. There's a lot of Amy Wilsons in
Yeah.
the world.
You know what I have a challenge with, I know it's called X now because Elon Musk doesn't support trans people. And it's like, well, you're trying to transition the name of this organization, but you will dead name your own child who is oh, frustrating.
That's another conversation for a different day, maybe
Yeah.
afterwards we'll talk about this. So what we want you to do is like if you've we also want to know how we can do better. Is life is all about getting feedback and improving and growing, like we were talking about earlier. We want to know, what do you like? What are other topics that you want us to geek out on and research and nerd out about? And so tell us on LinkedIn, tell us in the show notes, or like I think there's, you can rate us
Reviews on, yeah,
online. You
like
can
you
do
can do
reviews.
reviews and ratings, yeah.
Yeah, you do rate and review us, and anywhere you get podcasts out there. This helps other people find us and us to get be seen by more people.
Yeah,
We do
tell
this
others
because we
about
love.
us. Tell
Yeah,
others if you found value in
sure.
this. Tell others, and then please give us feedback so we can improve and do even better. Like
Right.
if, yeah.
Yeah, and we really appreciate being here. We do this because we want to have more empathy in the world, and we want to get more and more people to practice this work. And we love you, and we look forward to seeing you next season.
Bye.
Bye. Empathy Power Up is produced by Amy J. Wilson and Kevin Shaw, two people who bonded over their love for creating a deeper sense of empathy in the world. You can reach Amy at Real Amy J. Wilson and Kevin at Shaw Kevin.